Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, December 1st. For today's podcast, we've selected five excerpts from today's Supreme Court hearing on Mississippi's abortion law that we thought you might find interesting. We'll devote our time to just playing them rather than talking about them. You can see what you think for yourself. What I will say is that if you've never heard Supreme Court oral arguments before, it's really amazing to hear how these things work, with short presentations by the lawyers for each side, and then often aggressive questioning of them by the justices, who obviously feel no hesitation about interrupting. So here we go. The first clip we'll play is the longest. It's a 2.5-minute exchange between Justice Sonia Sotomayor and the Solicitor General of Mississippi, Scott Stewart, obviously arguing in favor of his state's abortion restrictions law. And in this clip, we'll hear Justice Sotomayor bring up the real-life effect on women and the First Amendment in the context of its guarantee of religious liberty.
How is your interest anything but a religious view? The issue of when life begins has been hotly debated by philosophers since the beginning of time. It's still debated in religions. So when you say this is the only right that takes away from the state the ability to protect a life, that's a religious view, isn't it? Because it assumes that a fetus is life at when? You're not drawing here. When do you suggest we begin that life?
Your Honor, I'm
putting it aside from religion.
I think there might be more than one question, and I'll do my very best, Justice Sotomayor. I think this court in Gonzales pretty clearly recognized that before viability, we are talking with unborn life with a human organism. And I think the philosophical questions Your Honor mentioned, all those reasons that they're hard, they've been debated, they're important, those are all reasons to return this to the people, because the people should get to debate these hard issues. And this court does not in that kind of a circumstance.
So when does the life of a woman and putting her at risk enter the calculus? Meaning, right now, forcing women who are poor, and that's 75% of the population, and much higher percentage of those women in Mississippi who elect abortions before viability, they are put at a tremendously greater risk of medical complications and ending their life, 14 times greater to give birth to a child full term than it is to have an abortion before viability. And now the state is saying to these women, we can choose not only to physically complicate your existence, put you at medical risk, make you poorer by the choice, because we believe what?
Sure, Your Honor. I think to answer, I think the question I think you led with and then I think it expanded on, but is still on the same issue, is as to when does a woman's interest enter? As far as we're concerned, it's there the entire time. Our point is that all of the interests are there the entire time, and Roe and Casey improperly prevent states from taking account and weighing those interests however they think best.
Justice Sotomayor with Mississippi's Solicitor General Scott Stewart. Here's our second clip. This time it's Chief Justice Roberts, important because he's considered a potential swing voter, asking the Mississippi Solicitor General why, if they throw out Roe, wouldn't they have to throw out other decisions decided on similar grounds? He refers at the start to the respect for precedent known as stare decisis.
On stare decisis, I think the first issue you look at is whether or not the decision at issue was wrongly decided. I've actually never quite understood how you evaluate that. Is it wrongly decided based on the legal principles and doctrine when it was decided, or in retrospect? Because Roe, I mean, there are a lot of cases around the time of Roe, not of that magnitude, but the same type of analysis that that went through exactly the sorts of things we today would say were erroneous. But do we look at it from today's, if we look at it from today's perspective, it's going to be a long list of cases that we're going to say were wrongly decided.
Well, I'd say, Mr. Chief Justice, that you can look both, was it wrong at the time? Has it been unmasked as wrong by new understandings, new knowledge, and any developments? But I think my colloquy with Justice Barrett indicated, the court won't have to be looking at much other, many other areas, because this is an area that has a uniquely problematic set of stare decisis considerations. A lot of other controversial areas, or once controversial areas, are quite settled, clear rules, and don't have those considerations against them. So really, by overruling Roe and Casey, the court won't have to go down that road, and a lot of those decisions are quite readily groundable in history, tradition, and the court's traditional factors, Your Honor.
Justice Roberts with the Solicitor General of Mississippi. Here's our third clip of the five. This is about a minute. It's Justice Alito asking head-on about fetal rights, and we'll also hear the response from the attorney, Julie Rickleman, representing the Center for Reproductive Rights. Justice Alito first.
The fetus has an interest in having a life, and that doesn't change, does it, from the point before viability to the point after viability?
In some people's view, it doesn't, Your Honor, but what the court said is that those philosophical differences couldn't be resolved
That's what I'm getting at. What is the philosophical argument, the secular philosophical argument for saying this is the appropriate line? There are those who say that the rights of personhood should be considered to have taken hold at a point when the fetus acquires certain independent characteristics, but viability is dependent on medical technology and medical practice. It has changed. It may continue to change.
Please. No, Your Honor. It is principled because in ordering the interest at stake, the court had to set a line between conception and birth, and it logically looked at the fetus's ability to survive separately as a legal line because it's objectively verifiable and doesn't require the court to resolve the philosophical issues at stake.
Justice Alito with Julie Rickleman from the Center for Reproductive Rights in the Supreme Court hearing today. Here's a clip of Justice Amy Coney Barrett asking Rickleman whether abortion rights aren't as necessary to a woman's self-determination as is being argued because adoption is another option. Again, the response comes from Attorney Julie Rickleman from the Center for Reproductive Rights. This clip runs about a minute. Here's Justice Barrett.
Actually, as I read Roe and Casey, they don't talk very much about adoption. It's a passing reference that means out of the obligations of parenthood. But as I hear this answer, then are you saying that the right, as you conceive of it, is grounded primarily in the bearing of the child and the carrying of pregnancy, and not so much looking forward into the consequences on professional opportunities and work life and economic burdens?
No, Your Honor. I believe it's both, and that is exactly how Casey talked about it. It talked about the two strands of cases that supported the right. One was the strand of cases supporting bodily integrity, and it cited to cases like Cruzan and Riggins versus Nevada. And the second was the strand of cases supporting decisional autonomy, and specifically decisions related to childbearing, marriage, and procreation decisions like Griswold, Loving. And so it's really both strands that we're relying on here.
Justice Barrett and Attorney Julie Rickleman. And finally, here's a clip of Justice Brett Kavanaugh, also a Trump appointee, as you probably know, and also considered a possible swing voter like Justice Roberts. If he and Roberts vote to uphold Roe or abortion rights under the Constitution in some other way, they will likely survive. It would take both of them to do that based on the assumptions about the other justices. So here's Justice Kavanaugh, who asks Center for Reproductive Rights attorney Julie Rickleman why the court shouldn't just be neutral on a contentious social issue and let politics sort it out through elections.
The other side would say that the core problem here is that the court has been forced by the position you're taking and by the cases to pick sides on the most contentious social debate in American life, and to do so in a situation where they say that the Constitution is neutral on the question of abortion, the text and history, that the Constitution's neither pro-life nor pro-choice on the question of abortion, and they would say, therefore, it should be left to the people, to the states, or to Congress. And I think they also then continue, because the Constitution is neutral, that this court should be scrupulously neutral on the question of abortion, neither pro-choice nor pro-life. But because they say the Constitution doesn't give us the authority, we should leave it to the states and we should be scrupulously neutral on the question. And that they are saying here, I think, that we should return to a position of neutrality on that contentious social issue rather than continuing to pick sides on that issue. So I think that's, at a big picture level, their argument. I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
Justice Brett Kavanaugh.
Yes, a few points, if I may, Your Honor. First, of course, those very same arguments were made in Casey, and the court rejected them, saying that this philosophical disagreements can't be resolved in a way that a woman has no choice in the matter. And second, I don't think it would be a neutral position. The Constitution provides a guarantee of liberty. The court has interpreted that liberty to include the ability to make decisions related to childbearing, marriage, and family. Women have an equal right to liberty under the Constitution, Your Honor, and if they're not able to make this decision, if states can take control of women's bodies and force them to endure months of pregnancy and childbirth, then they will never have equal status under the Constitution.
And there you have it, five excerpts from the Supreme Court hearing on the Mississippi abortion law today. Hey, I invite you to tune in to our live show tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock Eastern Time at WNYC or WNYC.org on the web to hear us discuss these excerpts and more. I'm Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening. Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.